Well, let's get now to the Washington, D.C. area. And Ken Timmerman, he's the man with a vantage point of looking at geopolitical activities unfolding around the world. You know, Washington, D.C. is the number one journalistic populated area in the world. Jerusalem is number two, Washington number one. And that's why it's so great to have Ken standing by in that location. Ken, just before we went on the air, you mentioned to me that you were a little bit late, almost thought you may not be here on time because you were actually taking your brand new book over to the publisher. Can you tell us a little bit about it right now?
Well, I can give you just a quick highlight. It's called Dark Forces, the True Story of the Spy Wars in Benghazi that killed four Americans. And it takes a real hard investigative look at what happened there, the attacks themselves. It provides new insight from sources on the ground of what actually happened. It's not entirely been told in public yet. There are a lot of things that went on that we don't know about or we didn't know about until my book came out. But more importantly, it looks into why we even had a CIA secret annex in Benghazi and why the U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens was sent there. It deals with arms smuggling, both to the Libyan rebels and to the Syrian rebels, and a lot of dark stories that the administration has been trying to keep quiet.
Oh, man, you've got my interest up. When do you think the publisher will have it out in the bookstores?
Well, I should be able to report back to you in a couple weeks on that. It's looking like it will be probably at the end of May or June.
Wow, keep us posted because I'm sure people with bated breath want to get a copy of that.
Well, you can pre-order it on Amazon.com if you just look for me or look for Dark Forces. I think they've already put it up there, so you can pre-order the book. But I'll have, again, more in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
That's fantastic. Dark Forces by Ken Timmerman. Well, let's get to the news. I know you can give us great insight into these headlines that we want to talk about with you. For example, let's focus on Syria. The regime there seems to be benefiting from missing the deadline for the destruction of the chemical weapons. They're not on par with where they should be, are they?
No, but again, there's a civil war going on, and they have to transport convoys of trucks containing very dangerous chemicals through enemy lines in some cases to get them to the port of Latakia and out to sea where they will be destroyed on board these ships that have been specially transformed to do this. So, I mean, it's not particularly surprising. What I think everybody wants to know is whether the Assad regime is actually stalling on this or whether these are just incidental things that have happened that have delayed them. The Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons has issued a joint statement with the United Nations calling on Syria to speed up the pace of delivering these chemical weapons and chemical weapons precursors. So far, nobody's yet sounding the alarm on this.
Do you have any information about Bashar Assad sending many of these chemical weapons up into the region where he comes from, up there in the northwestern corner of Syria, right there on the coast?
Well, I think that's what everybody's concerned about, and it's unclear yet whether some of these weapons will simply go missing, whether there were secret stockpiles that the Syrian government did not declare. Those are things that are going to be difficult to determine, and I'm not sure that the United Nations observers who are there taking reception of the declared stockpiles have the resources, the intelligence capabilities, to be able to determine if there are clandestine stockpiles.
Yes. Wait, before we leave Syria, I put up a video on our website, prophecytoday.com, the 10 leading news stories, the center of the home page of our website, which we change every single day. One of the reports was actually a shocking video of a child soldier. It was a 4-year-old jihadist who was holding an automatic weapon in his arms. Now, I'm not really thinking that he was indeed in battle, but child soldiers, Al-Qaeda is using them in Syria. This is a problem all across the Middle East, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's something that you see in Gaza, you've seen it in Sudan, you've seen it in a number of Muslim countries, where they essentially use the mosque to indoctrinate children. They use mothers to indoctrinate children in a culture of violent jihad and a culture of the gun. I hate to say that it's nothing new, Jimmy. I don't want to appear to be jaded, but you know, I've seen this in the Middle East in my 35 years of roaming the region and I've seen it all over the place. I've seen it repeatedly. So it's not new, but it is shocking to us, and it kind of shows the total disregard for normal, what we would consider normal values and family values. It doesn't exist in this region, which is highly politicized, highly indoctrinated by this violent jihadi ideology that certainly has no respect for children or for human life.
I want to put two articles together and ask you about them because they focus on the same thing. There is a political pundit who has written an editorial saying that Obama has tipped the balance of the Middle East in power towards Iran's favor. Now, I don't understand why. Maybe you can give us some insight. But at the same time, a pullout from the Middle East by the United States is supposedly going to fuel the nuclear proliferation situation out there.
Well, that's right. And I think that is probably the most dramatic immediate consequence we're going to see from this interim agreement that the Obama administration has struck with the Iranians. Everyone that I've talked to so far has very low expectations that the Iranians will perform the way that they have pledged to perform over the next 6 months. They have high expectations, however, that the United States will perform by lifting sanctions and lifting restrictions on Iran's access to capital overseas and its ability to sell its oil freely and to get the money and repatriate it back to Iran. So Iran gets sanctions relief right up front, and they do not make any real concessions that can be monitored up front on their nuclear weapons program. That's the problem. Now, what this does is it sends a message to other countries, Saudi Arabia, Turkey in particular, the United Arab Emirates to a lesser extent, that if they want to feel safe in the future, they cannot rely on the United States. If they are worried about a nuclear-armed Iran, they had better get in the nuclear game themselves. So that's what this proliferation threat is really all about, and it has certainly weakened the image of the United States amongst our allies and amongst potential adversaries.
Do you believe that President Obama is intentionally changing the balance of the Middle East towards Iran?
Well, I don't like to psychoanalyze the president or anyone else for that matter. I like to look at facts and what he's actually doing. The president would have to be a fool not to understand the repercussions of his actions here. He would have to be a fool not to have listened to his own advisors who have warned about the threats of proliferation as a result of this agreement. So why he would, knowing all of that, go ahead with it is something of a mystery. I don't believe that he's got a grand scheme up his sleeve, but he may believe that he's got one, and that's dangerous.
Talk to me just very quickly, maybe 15 seconds. We talked about it last week. It looks like Iraq is doing more and more to target Saudi Arabia's dominance of oil production in the Middle East. It's going to make Iraq, that war-torn country, come back pretty strong if they can sell their oil.
Well, and it'll be a good thing for all of us, too, because if there, all of a sudden you've got 6 million barrels of fresh oil on the market coming from Iraq, that will relieve the pressure on oil prices and also could relieve the pressure should another supplier, such as Iran, be taken off the market.
That's an interesting development, should indeed Iraq expand their oil production and their sales. And of course, that fits into an end-time prophetic scenario, i.e. Revelation chapter 18. Ken Timmerman looking at geopolitical activities for us from his vantage point in Washington, D.C. Ken, we're excited about your new book, and we're looking forward to another conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. In the meantime, I will go back and reread Revelation 18.